Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here. Feel at home after this power outage. We were discussing with Luis that being from Argentina and Brazil, we really feel very comfortable after the power. And the only thing we need to organize is a strike to really kill the. So it's great. So this is the title. I'm going to talk about quantum computation in Facebook. Well, I don't know. It's more or less okay. In FaceSpace. On FaceSpace. So what is the general idea of what I'm going to do? So what I would like to show you is how to represent quantum states and temporal evolution, so algorithms, of a quantum computer in FaceSpace. The tool that I'm going to use, you can use, and this is not the only way to do it, but the tool I'm going to mostly use is the Wigner function. So I will describe the Wigner representation for finite dimensional quantum systems, so systems with a finite dimensional Hilbert space. N is going to be the dimension of the Hilbert space, like a quantum computer. And the goal, I mean, the reason one may be interested in doing this is, first, we want to show how to study quantum algorithms, not only as algorithms that are designed to solve a computational problem, but as dynamical systems, as quantum maps, as to study features of the evolution that they induce on quantum systems. We want to study these algorithms or quantum maps in a limit in which we have a large number of qubits or a high dimensional Hilbert space, which is related to the semi-classical limit one usually is interested in quantum systems. And many tools that enable us to study this semi-classical limit have been developed by the community working in quantum chaos. This is a workshop bringing together people interested in quantum information, quantum computation, and quantum chaos. So I think that there are many tools that one can use that were developed by people analyzing semi-classical properties of quantum of systems that like quantum systems are classically chaotic that one can use for this. The goal is to learn new properties of existing algorithms. I will show you some interesting results on this. Maybe learn how to design new interesting physics simulations, and maybe help in designing new algorithms. That's the last thing. Of course, is the thing I know less. So the plan of the talk is the following. First, I will introduce Wigner functions for continuous and discrete systems, short review, show you how some typical quantum states of quantum computers look in phase space, so how does the Wigner function of these states look, how to represent quantum algorithms in phase space, and the properties of some interesting quantum algorithms like Fourier transform, shifts, some gates. I will discuss a little bit of the difference. How can one approach the understanding of the differences between quantum and classical evolution by looking at the phase space representation of the quantum evolution, and interesting example, I would say, of a quantum algorithm that has a nice representation in phase space. I will show you Grover's, and then I will talk about how to measure this phase space representation, how to do tomography to measure the Wigner function. People that are involved in this, from Argentina, Marco Saraceno, that is in the Nuclear Energy Commission, Cesar Miquel and Pablo Bianucci, two students, and on the fourth thing, the measurement of the Wigner function, also Ray Laflamme and Manny Neal and Camille Negrevin from Los Alamos. So what is the Wigner function? This is a kind of short review of the Wigner function for ordinary quantum mechanics, so continuous system, particle in one dimension. The Wigner function is a phase space, is a function in phase space, so it takes value of Q and P. Q is coordinate P momentum, and it's obtained from the density matrix, so it's in one-to-one correspondence to the density matrix, with the density matrix as this integral, which can be recast in this simpler way. So the Wigner function is a trace, so it's the average of rho times some operator that depends on Q and P, on the phase space point. These are known as phase space point operators. There are Hermitian operators. For every phase point in phase space, you have one operator that, in the ordinary case, you can show that it's defined in this way, where one uses the shorthand notation of alpha representing a point in phase space, Q and P, and this phase space point operator is a displaced reflection operator. B is a displacement in phase space, so it's e to the I qp minus pq displacement, and R is the reflection operator, taking the eigenstate of position q into minus q. You can show that this equation, this is the ordinary kind of, it's more common expression for the Wigner function, can be obtained as a trace of this operator times rho, so the average of this operator. But I mean, this is okay, but why is one interested in doing this? It has the following three interesting properties, so it's the closest you can get to a phase space distribution in quantum mechanics. The Wigner function is real and it's normalized to one. If you take the Wigner function of two states, multiply them and integrate over all phase space, you get the inner product between the two states up to the constant, trace of rho 1 times rho 2. And the third most important defining property of the Wigner function is the following. It gives you all the correct marginal distributions. If you integrate the Wigner function along any line in phase space, so integrate over Q and P subject to the constraint AQ plus BP equal to C, then you get always a positive number that is the probability that the measurement of the observable AQ plus BP is equal to C. So it gives you all the marginal distributions along any line, gives you the probability of measuring the observable that is corresponds to the perpendicular to that line. Of course, well, one knows that in quantum mechanics one cannot define a phase space density because one needs probability amplitudes and not probabilities, and this is reflecting the fact that the Wigner function can be negative. In general, it can be negative in phase space, and this is the typical looking Wigner function, has been used as a logo of many conferences. This is corresponds to the superposition of two coherent states, not the mixture, but the superposition of two coherent states localized in, say, well, who knows what it is, this is position and this is momentum, or doesn't matter, but it's a superposition of two coherent states with some average position and momentum, average position and momentum, and in between you have interference fringes which are aligned along the line perpendicular to the separation of the coherent states.
Is that a new mathematical plot you made yourself, or is this just the same JPEG? It's
the same one.
It's really getting all over the
board. Yeah, it's the same one that I did it some long time ago. So it's the same transparency, but this is black and white, I don't know why. Anyway, so this is continuous Wigner function. How do you do this for a finite dimensional Hilbert space? System with Hilbert space that has finite number of dimensions, n. First of all, you need to define what you mean by position and momentum in this system, because there is no natural there need not be a natural definition of what is the position and what is the momentum. So you just choose a basis in Hilbert space and you call it position basis. That's up to you, so it's arbitrary. It can be in a quantum computer, the computational basis. So you take n vectors labeled by x from 0 to n minus 1, or 1 to n, doesn't matter, it's the computational basis. We're going to call this the position basis. And then we have the discrete Fourier transform and the conjugate basis related to this one via the discrete Fourier transform we call the momentum basis. So we have two bases, position and momentum, related by the Fourier transform in the same way we do for a continuous system. And this is the, say, wave function of the position eigenstate in the momentum eigenstate in the position basis is given by the Fourier transform. So the Wigner function, there is quite a vast literature that I was not aware of at the beginning when we started playing with this. Then I came to know about it. This Wigner function was discovered and rediscovered by many people independently in many contexts. For example, people working in quantum chaos. The canonical paper is Hanai and Berry, where they did the, I think, applied the discrete Wigner function at least for the first time in that context. Then people interested in spin systems finding or quantum optics. Important references: Lenhardt and many papers referred in that paper by Ulf Lenhardt. Bill Wouters designed a slightly different Wigner function, but okay, the one we're going to use is related to Hanna-Iberi and Lenhardt, slight modification, but doesn't matter. It's the following. So again, the Wigner function is also defined as the average of some operator that depends on phase space points, and this operator is the following. It's a, you have to construct it using a reflection operator and two displacement operators in position and momentum. So you take U tilde is an operator that shifts the position in one, so it's a cyclic shift. So add one to the, take the states x into x plus one, mod n. So you, if you take the last state, you go back to the first one. V is the shift in the momentum basis, and you can show that the right way of choosing the phase space point operator is by this combination. So you take u to the power q, r, v to the power, this is a plus p. And by some reasons that I'm not going to explain because it's gonna, would be kind of a technical, too technical talk that I don't want to be, in order to be able to define a Wigner function with all the right properties, meaning basically this generalization of the three properties that I described before, something that is real, something that allows you to compute expectation value, inner products by just taking Wigner function number one, number two, and adding over all the phase space grid, gives you the inner product between the two states, and something that is positive when you add its value along any line in phase space, vertical, horizontal, any kind of, any set of lines. For that you need to define a phase space which is a grid which is not n by n but 2n by 2n. So you need twice the number of points. Somehow you can guess that something like this will happen if you remember the original definition of the Wigner function for a continuous system. This integral, it has this you evaluate the function at point QP, you need position eigenstates at point which are Q minus Xi over 2. This factor of 2 is going to cause problems when you have a finite grid, so you will need the points in between the two real points to define something that makes sense. But, well, okay, if you don't like this argument, we can give you more formal proof that you need. You want to ask some question?
Yeah. So you define arbitrarily that x and p are canonical, x goes to p via the Fourier transform over n. What happens if you take a different Fourier transform?
Different? What do you mean?
Well, Fourier transforms are... you can define a Fourier transform over the group z to the n, like the Hadamard transform, or... So why? So there are Fourier transforms that are typical or sort of capture the properties of the sort of problem that you're interested in.
Yes.
Like in factoring, you would take this one, but in Simon's algorithm, you take the Fourier transform over z to the n.
Yes.
By the Hadamard.
Yes.
So if you define the x.
So you will get a different notion of phase space. So x and p are going to be.
Yes.
So this notion of phase space depends on the use of the Fourier transform, this discrete Fourier transform. That's all I can say. That's a fact. So it's dependent on that.
So the choice of Fourier transform is equivalent to the choice of canonical conjugate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So there are other choices of Fourier transform related to, for example, you can add phases here, which are called Floquet angles or things like that are related to different boundary conditions on the phase space. Add angles here, x plus something, p plus something. These are used in different quantizations of, in quantum chaos, people use it. They define your conjugate variables, yes. So this is a construction that depends on that. Okay. So how does a Wigner function look like now? Something like this. So, for example, if you take this is one plot of a Wigner function. This is for another state. So for this state, this is a computational state. So an eigenstate of a member of the computational basis, state number, you know, something, will give you a Wigner function that has a positive strip. Black is positive, white is negative, and gray is zero. So this is position, this is momentum. So it has a positive strip located in the point where you put the position eigenstate. And it has a oscillating positive and negative strip, which is located at n. Remember that this is a grid 2n by 2n. So this is located at 2 times the position where you put it. And this is located n sites away. So it has the following property, that if you add the Wigner function along a vertical line, it will give you positive equal to 1 in this strip. And here, it will be zero everywhere else, because it's zero, gray is zero. And if you add this, as you have plus minus, it adds to zero. So it's non-zero only in this line. Now if you add along horizontal lines, will give you, if you are in an even side, will give you a plus. So if you are in an odd side, it will give you a plus and minus, so you will get zero. And if you add in an even side, it will give you plus and plus, you will get 1 over n. So you have probability of measuring the momentum is equal for all momentum. Probability of measuring the position is non-zero only in the site where you put the state. This is the Wigner function of superposition of two position eigenstates. So you have two vertical strips which are positive. This one and this one, located in the place corresponding to the position that you chose, number one and number two. In between, you have interference fringes, the same way you had interference fringes with the superposition of two coherent states. And in here, you have these ghost images. Now, these vertical strips can also be interpreted as interference fringes, simply because you are imposing here in the phase space periodic boundary conditions, because you are saying that the state 0 and the state n are the same for momentum. So it means that if you put a positive strip here, there is a mirror image somewhere here, then you have an interference fringe between the main peak and its mirror image. So these oscillating strips can correspond to the interference between the state and its images due to the periodic boundary conditions. So this is the same, has the same origin. Some other example, which is kind of more interesting, is the following, that one on top, which is, now this is position and this is momentum, or the other way, doesn't matter. So we have a coherent state, which is a Gaussian positive peak, and then we have the fringes horizontally aligned here, vertically aligned here, like a checkerboard pattern in here, which come precisely because of the interference between this main peak and its mirror image here, mirror image there, mirror image everywhere. So you have all these oscillatory patterns due to the boundary conditions. And on the bottom, what you have is the Wigner function corresponding to the completely mixed state. So the identity density matrix is just zero everywhere except in the intersection between even and even sides. So these kind of patterns are the ones that characterize the quantum states of the Wigner function. You are not asking a question, Bhima, no? Sorry.
I missed that. What was the first state?
The last?
No, the first. The last one is complete.
The first is a Gaussian wave packet. So you take a Gaussian state, a Gaussian wave packet, periodized Gaussian, no? And it has Gaussian peak here, Gaussian peak image, and in between interference.
I'm thinking of something trivial.
Yes.
If you were to move your Gaussian to the middle,
yes.
You're going to try to set out of this checkerboard thing?
Here?
Yeah.
The positive peak?
Yeah.
No, you will have the kind of half of the of this one, it will be half here and half here, and so they will, you will cut them. Yeah, just displace them. Everything that goes on the top comes from the bottom, and if you go from the right, comes from the left.
So if you were to push the lines that you had before, vertical,
yes,
right, to the middle, will the interference pattern sort of settle on the edges?
Or? Yes. Yeah. Okay. So these are the states. Okay. Typical states of a quantum computer. The only thing I showed you is that Wigner function exists for finite dimensional systems, and the typical states, they look that way. So instead of having interference fringes due to the interference between two coherent states, for example, you have due to boundary conditions also.
Which presumably would happen if you had continuous variables going on with torus or something.
With the right.
If you had a continuous,
I mean, the phase space has the topology of a torus.
The same kind of structure.
Yes.
This,
yes. Yes. So you are leaving your phase space is a torus, and due to that fact, you have this.
How does the linear function of complete superposition of all states?
Superposition of
all states.
All computational states.
Yeah.
That's a momentum eigenstate. Yes. So instead of a vertical line, it's a horizontal line. So it's the same, okay, so temporal evolution. So we have this tool to represent states in phase space, quantum states in phase space. Now let's look at their evolution, how quantum states evolve when you apply some unitary operator, which corresponds to the action of your, you are operating your quantum computer, induce some unitary evolution and see what happens. So the density matrix evolves in this way. You can show very easily that the Wigner function evolves linearly. Of course, this is linearity in quantum mechanics, cannot be different. So the Wigner function, at the new value of the Wigner function at point alpha, is just a sum over all phase space. Alpha and beta denote phase space point, Q and P. So sum over all phase space of the old value of the Wigner function times some matrix, Z alpha beta, that depends on the unitary transformation. You can show how to get this matrix. It's just a trace of two of these phase space point operators sandwiched in between U's. So easy calculation, you can get it. And there are unitarity, of course, imposes some constraints on the Z alpha beta. Not every Z alpha beta comes from a unitary operator. So I'm not going to write what are the constraints, but they're simple. Let me try to give you some general results about how quantum evolution looks in phase space. In general, one feature is that Z alpha beta is non-local. It means that for a given alpha, there are many betas for which Z alpha beta is non-zero. That's natural. Now, this is a quantum property because a classical system has the opposite behavior. So it's for classical systems, you have a flow of in phase space. So locality of Z alpha beta is corresponds to the existence of some classical map from which you get the new value of the Wigner function at point alpha. It comes from the old value of the Wigner function at some other point that depends on alpha. So if this happens, the Wigner function flows according to some function. So that's sort of classical evolution is characterized by this. So you can ask, what kind of unitary operators have this kind of classical looking evolution in phase space? And there are a few interesting ones that we can show. First one is sort of trivial, but it's interesting, Fourier transform. So the Fourier transform is completely classical because it's just a pi over 2 rotation. Because it corresponds to a canonical transformation that changes position into momentum and momentum into position. This minus sign is a modulo 2n, so it's the inverse of the point. Fourier transform then is classical. Therefore, if you ask how does it look, it's your question, if this is the Wigner function of a computational state or a superposition of computational states, the Wigner function of momentum state is this. So you just rotate it pi over 2. Yes.
What was your definition for You said Z alpha beta is non-local in general.
In general.
Something about classic. What makes an evolution classical again?
No, I just told you that in general, Z alpha beta is non-local. Right. That's a fact. I'll show you some examples. But for some particular operators, U, it may be that it's local.
And this okay. rotation
and local,
is local?
Yes, because it's just a given point in a new point. The new value of the Wigner function comes from the value of the Wigner function at some other point in phase space. That's a rotation of pi over 2. Okay, it's just a map. You map the new value here comes from the old value there. So from
the
here you
want to... The local is that the value at a particular point alpha depends on the value at only one point beta,
right.
not multiple
points. One point.
So definition just one. Is that you can just drop one. The sum up there.
Yeah, just one. That's that the z that the function z alpha beta is a local function of is some delta of alpha beta,
sorry.
Delta of alpha and the function of...
If U is a local gate, then it will depend
on... No. Wait. Yeah, local gates, I mean, you are thinking of locality in terms of qubits?
Yeah.
Neighboring interaction between qubits has nothing to do with that. This is a definition. My definition of locality is in phase space, which
yeah,
is...
But suppose I'm interested in local gates, then it
okay.
will depend on a few, no?
Yes. But I will show you how a local gate... No.
But qubit one.
Let us postpone this discussion.
That's his classic.
Right.
Let me postpone the answer to your question for 1 minute. It's sort of related, but think. Okay. Think of the most significant qubit. What does the most significant qubit indicate in my phase space? It divides the phase space in two halves. So the half in the left corresponds to the states that have the zero in the most significant qubit, and the one in the right, or the other way, are the ones that have one in the most significant qubit. So it defines kind of a chunk of phase space, like a coarse grained, it's a strip, a vertical strip.
And you should also split momentum somehow?
You can, but...
This is different?
Yes. We'll get into that in a minute. So, but it's clear, I'm just looking at the evolution of the Wigner function and telling you that for some operators, the Wigner function maps one point into some other point. The evolution maps one point. Fourier transform is one example which is expected because you used the Fourier transform to define momentum from position, so it's sort of you used the Fourier transform in constructing the notion of phase space for these systems. Another which is slightly less trivial is cyclic shifts. If you have one of these operators that, remember, U tilde is an operator that takes a computational state and moves it one place to the right, and V tilde is the guy that does it for momentum. So this is some operator that displaces momentum by B and position by A, but rigidly in phase space. So you can show that if the evolution operator is like this, then the Wigner function flows also classically. Just the next value at point Q and P comes from the previous value at point Q minus 2A, P minus 2B, and this factor of 2 is because of the 2N by 2N grid. So it's a rigid translation. So you have rotations, translations, and the most general, you can show that the most general, it's interesting, this is, has also sort of been known in the quantum chaos community, and it's in Hannah and Berry paper. You can define what are known kicked linear maps, also known as cut maps, by using two operators. So I will construct this operator U as a successive application of an operator T, which corresponds to a kinetic kick, and V, a potential kick. T and V are the following. T is diagonal in momentum basis, and its matrix elements are e to the minus I 2 pi over n, some integer over 2 k squared. So this is like a momentum square in the e to the minus I p squared. So it's a kinetic term in the Hamiltonian. You kick it, and you put some amplitude A. And V is like a potential term, so it's diagonal in position, and it's quadratic also, n squared times some other B. For any A and B, you can show that this circuit, so this quantum unitary, so this unitary operator has the following property. It maps the Wigner function according to a linear transformation. So this next value of the Wigner function in point alpha comes from the previous value at some other point, which is obtained from alpha by applying a matrix, inverse matrix. The matrix M is a 2x2 matrix, which saying that the Q and P point here comes from previous point, which is a linear transformation, it's a linear combination of the old one. So it's like what happens with the system with a quadratic, with a Hamiltonian, continuous system with a Hamiltonian that is quadratic in position and in momentum. So new canonical variables are linear combination of the old ones. The matrix has determinant 1 because it comes from a canonical transformation. You can show that this unitary operator acts in this way in the classical in the Wigner function. So how it looks, let me show you a little picture. So if we apply the kinetic kick to a position eigenstate, so the position eigenstate, which is the position is here and this is the interference fringe, then we apply the kinetic kick with choosing the there was a parameter A which measures the strength of the kick, which I choose to be 1. So it's just a kinetic term. The final state is this one. You see what happens is that like a shear, so you move this to 45 degrees, like the these guys have higher position, higher momentum than this guy, so this one doesn't move. This one moves faster. This guy comes here, and due to the boundary conditions, it went out of the torus. Here, it came back here.
So the strength of the kick of 1 gives you the slope.
Right. You see, the slope is 1 because the strength is 1.
So the strength of kicks are quantized.
Yes. Huh? No, you can choose another. You can choose integers,
yes,
but you can choose non-integers. The fact you will always,
okay,
I'll show you in a minute, but the result that I quoted, that Wigner function evolves classically for this kind of maps, is valid if A and B are integers. If they are not integers, then Wigner function,
yes,
does something more weird, which I can show you, but
what does that mean that it evolves classically?
Classically, that you can define a classical map on the torus, which is a linear, these are the linear transformation on the torus, linear homomorphisms on the torus. And the Wigner function evolves according to this classical dynamical system. Okay, it flows according to a classical dynamical system that is just a linear transformation.
Is that equivalent to incompressible flow? The transform is generated by incompressible flow in phase space, Liouville flow, in other words.
Yeah, it is incompressible in the sense that it's a canonical transformation. The determinant of this matrix is 1.
Right.
But
it doesn't spread out. It just gets.
But there are other classical, this is a very specific, very simple classical transformation because it's generated by a quadratic Hamiltonian. If you have some cubic term, instead of n squared, you have n cubed, you still have some classical analog, but the Wigner function will not evolve according to that classical analog, but will do weird things that I'll show you in a minute. If this is one example of a kicked system. If now I add the potential term. Before it was just the kinetic term. Now I add the kinetic term and the potential term. Now instead of going into, remember before it was just this line was 45 degrees and coming back through here. Then what you have is after the action of this one, what you have is like a stretching, so the lines were stretched, so there are like holes in between. You see positive zero, this is due to the stretching, and you stretched by a factor of of 2, because I'm putting a minus 1 here, so the potential term is like an upside down harmonic oscillator. It's not the harmonic oscillator, it goes, it's unstable, and this is the classical analog to this is exactly, it's a map that is very well known, which is the Arnold cut map, exactly that. So Wigner function evolves exactly as the Arnold cut in this system. But so these are classical, so these are examples of systems for which classical and quantum evolution are the same. But in general, this is not going to be the case. Classical and quantum are not going to be the same. For example, you may ask, take a gate, some classical Boolean gate. So you have a function of the first n integers to the first n integers, which defines a unitary operator. So you apply the operator U sub f to state x, and it maps you into a state f of x. So it's a permutation of the computational basis. It's a permutation of the computational basis, for example, XOR gate, Toffoli, many gates are like this. So the result is the following. Quantum and classical you can define a classical dynamics associated to this gate, because it's like taking the phase space, divide it into vertical strips, and permute the vertical strips according to f. Now the result is the following. Quantum, the Wigner function, what I'm telling you, is not going to do that. It's not going to evolve in that way. It's going to evolve differently. I'll show you some example. It will only evolve according to the same classical rule if the function f of x is x plus a, so it corresponds to a rigid shift. That's a simple theorem that one can show, and the reason it's true, you can see it from here, if you want to. I will not show it in detail, but comes from here. Think of the following. This is the state that corresponds to a superposition of two computational states. Now apply, what is going to happen to this state if you apply the map U, the operator U? Now this computational state is going to be mapped into the state F of this one. This one is going to be mapped into F of that one. What is going to happen to the interference fringe in between? In general, it's going to be mapped into some other place, which is not going to lie in between the new two positions of the positive peaks. The only way in which this state can evolve classically, and in such a way that the interference fringe is still in between the two positive peaks and has the same wavelength, because the wavelength of this interference depends on the distance between these fringes. The only case is the case in which the function f is a linear function just corresponding to a rigid shift.
Rotation also.
Rotation, yes, but it's not. A rotation does not correspond to a permutation of the computational basis, so it's just different.
So, you said the cap maps are classical by your definition.
Yes.
Essentially, the first part corresponded to a skewing,
yes,
kinetic part of the cap map, and the potential part to a sort of stretching.
It's a, yeah, skewing in the.
But if you don't skew
vertical
and you only stretch, then that seems to violate the classicality condition.
No, just multiply by phase.
But you stretch it discretely, which means you map points. Essentially, you.
No, because you will stretch and they will come back, and you will, a position eigenstate is an eigenstate of that of the cut map without stretching.
But
you see, a vertical line is mapped into the same vertical line because the state n goes into the state n times the phase, so which is the same.
You don't get any holes in the line.
No, because you can think you stretch them, but the ones that go on top come back and fill the holes.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not no problem. So in general, so a gate, simple gates are going to do something weird in the sense that they will give some quantum, they will have some quantum effect associated to them in this viewpoint, using this notion of phase space that may be unnatural, and I'm not claiming that it's going to be natural always. except for these simple rigid shifts. In general, for example, a C-note or some simple gate is going to do something different. What it's going to do, you can think of this in terms of diffraction in phase space. Because what happens is that when you, for example, do something different to qubit number, to the most significant qubit than to the rest. For example, the most significant qubit is the one that acts as the control of some quantum operation. You are cutting the phase space in two halves. Every time you cut the phase space in two halves, it's like putting a slit or some cut, and you have a wave propagation, you will see diffraction. You will see something that looks like the classical plus diffraction effects. So let me show you that this is indeed the case in an example which is sort of a variation of, well, I have several examples, but this one I will keep for someone ask a question, cut it short. So I do the following. Exactly as the same, so this is the diffracted cut map. So kinetic kick, and now instead of doing the potential kick, I do something different, which is I let the most significant qubit go through, and then I apply the potential kick to the rest, conditioned on this one. So if the most significant qubit is zero, I don't do anything. So I do nothing in the left of the, so in one half of the phase space. I apply this one on the second half of the phase space, and what you get is something that has this what? So this is a cut map with diffraction, in the sense that classically what you should get is a red line here at 45 degrees, and then red lines at and twice the slope here and here. So this is the trace of the classical. Now it's not the cut map; it's a cut. So I don't know. I cut a cut in two pieces and apply it differently. I don't know. I don't have a name for that. But is this, and that. That gives you the what you should expect classically, but quantum mechanically, what you get is this weird big function that has diffraction effects. Now, diffraction is can be inconvenient. In fact, the if you analyze analytically what is the form of the how the positive region is distorted, you get the diffraction belt exactly, and the diffraction effect can be seen to get smaller when n is larger. But I lost my... Yes. So this is the, in general, the evolution of the quantum computer in phase space will exhibit some behavior that you could relate to classical evolution plus diffraction effects. The question I would like to address now is the following: is phase space representation of existing algorithms interesting or useful? And this is the phase space representation of Grover's. Oops. Grover's algorithm is a Grover's search. It's an algorithm that searches for a marked item in an unstructured database. So you have a I will not explain what Grover exactly how it is constructed, but the idea is that you start from a state which is a momentum eigenstate has no knowledge at all about there is no privileged position here, and you are searching for an item which is here marked in this plot by this broken line. So there is a line here. This is the item number 16. I think this is a simulation of 32 dimensional thing, so it's 5 qubits here. I used for convenience, but it's arbitrary. It's the same for all dimensions. So you start from a state which is a momentum eigenstate, so superposition of all positions, and you apply Grover's algorithm that is trying to find this number. So this is the number in the database that you are trying to locate. You apply it once, and you see that it some this state gets distorted in a quantum way because you see oscillations. You apply it more and more and more and more, and what Grover's does is goes from this momentum eigenstate into a position eigenstate, which is now placed at the position of the marked item. So it transforms this guy that ignores completely the position into someone that has a very sharp peak in the position. Actually, it's not position eigenstate, but it has a very sharp peak. So if you measure the position now, you will get the marked item with the high probability. Now, this has some interpretation as some classical, yes?
Key pole 5 looks very much like a key pole 0, just
rotated. Yes.
The rotation you told us was a transform.
Yes.
Is this a coincidence or is something?
No, it's a, it's sort of. This is not. Let me address this point. This has a structure that looks very much like what a classical map would do if the map has a fixed point in the intersection between the initial momentum and the position that you are trying to find out. That you don't know the position. I mean, the oracle knows, but you are not allowed to know. So this has a fixed point in this intersection between the initial momentum and the position that you are trying to look. And then what you see is like a flow from here to here, following some kind of lines, in which it's not a classical evolution, because you see diffraction. These are oscillations in the Wigner function. So there are negative areas in the Wigner function that disappear for a specific time. If you continue,
so just
a coincidence that you, yes, that map, you are like two squares, this line and the other line will get in position. Yeah. I mean, the position, the fixed point corresponds to the initial, the intersection between the initial momentum and the item that you are trying to search. So the map depends on the position of the marked item, because the oracle knows, and every time you apply the oracle, you apply an operation that depends on that.
The way you draw it,
yes.
Does the algorithm work for any momentum eigenstate?
Yeah, I mean, actually, ordinary Grover's algorithm is designed to run for initial momentum state, initial state that is zero momentum, but I just modified it slightly so that the initial state can be a momentum, any momentum, because otherwise the plot doesn't look that nice, because you start from a line which is here below, and then it also looks nice, but it can be anything. Yes.
Can you just remind me why we don't just ask the oracle? We wonder if we have steps, why not just say, hey, what is it?
Well, do you want me to answer that question?
Yeah, I can't remember this. I've heard people could talk some things on before, and I remember thinking it was very clever.
I mean, you're not. There are. You're supposed to follow the rules. There are rules in this game. This is a game. If you ask the oracle what is the marked item, it's not legal. So.
No, the oracle doesn't know.
Yeah, it only
knows when you ask him, is right. X the marked.
No, but the guy that he says that. I mean, the guy that built the oracle knew. I mean, of course, you need to know.
He went away.
Right. So he constructed the machine that answers questions, yes or no question. Yes, gives you yes or no answer, and the question to which it gives you the answer is this the number you've chosen? Yes or no. So this is the only legal question that you are allowed to ask in a quantum way. So it's a quantum oracle that okay.
So the oracle does not know, it just answers yes or no.
So, this is actually all I know about interesting phase space representation. Well, almost, but the rest is too speculative existing quantum algorithms. And I don't know if phase space representation is going to be a useful tool to analyze existing algorithms. But Grover's algorithm has a nice feature, and can be interpreted as a quantum version of a classical map with a phase with a fixed phase space point in this intersection. So, but now to in the last few minutes of the talk, Yes.
Did you try other algorithms and they didn't look nice?
Yes. No, I didn't try that many, but there are not that many. Shorts is the other one. But Shorts is more complicated. I did not. Yeah. Okay. No, I didn't try that. I didn't try those ones.
And sure, you didn't try.
Yeah, sure. I did try, but I'm working on this now. It doesn't look interesting so far.
But okay. So again, there it might be useful to use a different
Fourier transform. In Shorts, I don't think so.
Well, you should use at least Fourier transform, which is a tensor product of the Fourier transform, the first
one. Oh yeah.
Naturally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you try other initial conditions, like if you have an NMR machine, NMR quantum computer, trying to solve this problem, how the phase space looks? So slight deviation from a equilibrium state?
No.
But it must look like a mixture of whatever you want to do with the unit density matrix. Right, so it's like a small modulation on top of the unit density matrix, basically.
Mm-hmm. To see if there will be signatures of these
quantum and interference. No, and we didn't try that. But okay. So next, I want to talk is a brief discussion about: is it possible to directly measure the Wigner function? So this object that you use to represent the state in phase space is obtained from the density matrix. Now, if you need the whole density matrix to construct the Wigner function, and eventually if you want to say, well, I will code the answer to some physics question or some computational question in the value of the Wigner function at some point in phase space, do I need to measure all the state, the complete state, or not? No, well, it turns out that it is possible to do a very nice, well, I found it nice, but beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. So is it possible to directly measure the Wigner function? Answer, yes. How do you do it? Following way. Remember that the Wigner function is a trace of rho times A, where A is this guy. Actually, this is a scheme that works for continuous and discrete system, for any system. This is for the discrete case, and for the continuous case, remember it was the displaced reflection operator. So the way to measure the Wigner function directly for every point alpha is to use a general tomographic scheme that allows you to measure the trace of rho times U for any, for general operators U, for any unitary, for example, operator U, and this is a variation of the following scheme. So the idea is to notice that tomography, Wigner tomography or any tomography, and also spectroscopy, I will add a slightly more general twist here, are two dual forms of a simple quantum computation. This is in a paper that I'm going to post probably next week, collaboration with Ray Laflamme, Manny Neal, and Camille, which is the following. Think of the following circuit that is present everywhere in many quantum algorithms. Phase estimation, Kitaev, various versions of this algorithm exist. It's the following. You have a system which is in some state rho. Can be anything. The system doesn't need to be a collection of qubits. Can be a mode of the electromagnetic field, for example, in a cavity. Then you have a two-level system, a qubit, which you prepare in a state zero, and you do Adamard transform. So from zero, it goes into zero plus one, superposition of zero plus one. Then you apply control U, where U is some arbitrary unitary. Then you do Hadamard, and then you measure this qubit, but you have a collection of these things, and you measure the polarization of the qubit. So expectation value of sigma z, which is the number of probability of observing the qubit in the state zero minus the probability of observing the qubit in state one. Or you measure expectation value of sigma x, which is a different combination. Without this rotation, you directly measure. So the important result, which is very simple to get, is that these two measurements, what they reveal is the real part and the imaginary part of the trace of rho times u. That's a simple calculation, trace of rho times u. So by doing this kind of measurement, you can know, you can use this scheme as a tomographer or a spectrometer, which are two dual operations in some sense, because if you know about rho, so you prepare the state in some initial state, some known initial state, you can learn about you. For example, Gitaev phase estimation is you prepare rho in an eigenstate of u, and then you learn about the phase, so the eigenvalue. This is a way of doing spectroscopy. For example, if you know, if you don't know about rho, you prepare it in the identity density matrix, the expectation value of sigma z gives you the trace of u, which is the sum of all eigenvalues. So it's, you have information about the spectrum, and what we showed in this paper is that it's very simple to modify slightly this quantum algorithm to build efficient circuits that measure directly, for example, the spectral density of u or some other function that gives you information about the correlations in the spectrum, the structure function, for example, for which is for large systems gives you the information about how, what is the probability of finding two levels separated by some energy E. So these kind of things, this kind of general spectroscopy can be performed by using this kind of idea. And of course, a general kind of tomography can also be used by playing with this idea, because if you now change, choose U from a basis of the operators, of the Hermitian operators, take a basis of Hermitian operators, and choose different, run this circuit for every member of the basis, and for each time you run the circuit, what you get is the projection of rho into that basis. So you do tomography and you completely can completely determine the state in that way. So the way to measure directly the Wigner function is choose u equal to a of alpha. So for every alpha, you run this circuit for u equal to a of alpha, and then you measure in this way the Wigner function. So this is the general kind of design for the tomography of the Wigner function. So and so relation, this is just like a kind of a disclaimer, transparency. So relation to previous work, spectroscopy is kind of known in quantum algorithms that you relate this to properties of the spectrum of U. Tomography, it's nice to know that this experiment, there is a measurement of the Wigner function proposed by Louis Davidovich and Lutherbach, one of his students, where they showed, they proposed how to measure the Wigner function of the electromagnetic field in a high Q cavity, in a cavity QED experiment. The experiment was done in the Ecole Normale Supérieure by Serge Haroche and his group, and it precisely follows this set of steps. So you have your system rho is the state of the electromagnetic field in a high Q cavity. This is an atom. Now the two-level system that you send is an atom. It goes through a Ramsey zone. Then there is an interaction between the atom and the field in the cavity, which is a dispersive interaction, which in effect implements a gate, which is a controlled reflection. You can show that or read it in Louis' paper. Then you say, you go through a Ramsey zone again, and you measure the polarization, probability of going up minus down, and this is the Wigner function. In one point in phase space, which is the origin, if you want to change the point, it's okay. You can do it. So this is the tomography of the Wigner function, and this is just result of a recent NMR experiment we did to measure the discrete Wigner function now of a system which is a two-qubit system. Oops. So one thing that is easy to show is that this control A operation is you can implement it efficiently. It's very easy to write a circuit to do control A, because A is a shift in position, a reflection, and a shift in momentum. Control shift in position is just addition of one mod n. There are simple circuits to do that. Same for V, and the reflection is easy to do it, because it's just if you apply the Fourier transform twice, you get the reflection. So it's easy to construct this circuit. So it is possible to do efficiently Wigner tomography in this way. So we did it for a two-qubit system with one-qubit probe, using two qubits as two nuclear spins in a molecule with three qubits, and the hydrogen as the third probe particle. So, summary. It is possible to represent states and evolution of quantum computers in phase space. Okay. Is it useful? Sometimes. I don't know. I'm not a complete believer in this, but I find that there are interesting questions that you can address using this method. One, it may be interesting to continue investigating if this is a way to understand what the differences between quantum and classical evolution for quantum computers, for computers. It is clearly an interesting way to understand dynamical properties of quantum algorithms, not as algorithms, but as maps, quantum maps. This I didn't talk about at all. Improved quantum circuits in semi-classical regime, but I'll give you some vague. If you remember the cut that was not, well, you cannot see, this is that way. The cut that was not evolving classically because of diffraction, that was for n equal 32. If you do this for n equal, this is 256, so it's a bigger cut. The diffraction goes away quite a lot. So the diffraction goes away in the semi-classical limit, because these systems behave classically for some time. And after some time, they start showing, this has been analyzed by people analyzing quantum chaos. There is a breakup time before that, and the breakup time is logarithmic in n, so it's interesting from the quantum computational point of view, because it's a time which is, if you go many times, if you have to do run some algorithm for a time which is polynomial in n, you are not interested. You are interested in something that is logarithmic in n only. So during this logarithmic time, quantum and classical are going to coincide quite accurately up to these diffraction effects that go away in the large n limit. So it may be interesting to study if there are ways to improve or to modify quantum circuits by using circuits which are not the same operators but are semi-classically the same operators. So behave semi-classically in the same way. This one does. If you go beyond 256, your screen goes out of resolution, but your printer too, but you see that the diffraction effects disappear. In here you have a positive red thing, 45 degrees, and the red here and here, and the rest, sort of this is the area where you have diffraction, goes away and away when you increase the dimensionality. And finally, I showed you how to measure directly the Wigner function by doing a special tomographic scheme, which is a particular case of a kind of a general idea. So that's all.
Continually, because you have this result to Moyal that averages of symmetrically ordered quantum operators can be written as classical averages. Is that true here too? For the discrete Wigner function? So you calculate averages of symmetrical.
Yes. It is true. The Weyl transform.
You can do it that too.
Right. You can compute averages using the Wigner function. And they give you, if you average any for observables that only depend on position and momentum, it's kind of trivial that you can do it. But for observables that depend on both, you get some special order, which is the Weyl order. So it's like a generalization of the Weyl order for discrete system. Dima?
Of course, I find very interesting these observations of efficiently you can measure Wigner function at some given point of phase space. But nevertheless, I would ask the following question, taking like Arnold Katnett.
Yes.
Discussing. So if I really gain information from this process, so I can find what is at that point PQ prime time, which you choose, what is the probability 0 or 1. But for NordCat, it's like classical. So I can take this point in which you measure and to run back and compare with the initial distribution and to say, after returning back in time, is the point from the black or white points. Do I really gain this Arnold cat map information?
I don't think you gain anything by doing that. By doing it in that way, I think that your question.
No, I compare with other procedures, so.
Right.
You say you, I gained exponentially, because you say I made efficient measurement, which is exponential.
Yeah, but I didn't relate. I'm not relating to the kind of physics simulations that you are doing. I mean, you are showing how to simulate classical chaotic systems in quantum computers.
I'm not speaking now about our results. Okay?
Yes.
I'm speaking also example you gave.
Yes.
During your talk, quantum Arnold cat map.
Yes.
Which is like classical.
Yes.
So on that example, will I gain exponentially or not in this measurement? That's my question.
But. But you will gain exponentially. No, but you will gain exponentially to answer what question? I don't know. To answer what's the Wigner function, but who wants to know what's the Wigner function? I don't know.
You start from some initial distribution of points in the phase space, you make them evolve, that you can do efficiently, that's true, and then you say, I make an efficient measurement at some point.
Yes.
And you break an answer 0 or 1.
Yes.
But then I can say that this, since everything is running classical, for this example I'm discussing.
Right.
I can run this point back in time and simply say, is it pointed from black or white part of initial distribution?
So you're saying that the classical simulation.
On that example of quantum.
No, you don't get anything.
Will I get gain exponentially in information or not?
I don't. I didn't think of
apply your method of that. For giving that, for example,
no, I don't.
You discussed me at all. That's my point.
Yeah, no, but okay.
Why not to connect two parts of your talk?
Fine, let's connect them. But I don't think you will get. I mean, the classical simulation of Arnold cat map is you can do it efficient.
Like, as you described. Yeah.
But the quantum and the classical are the same.
Okay.
So that's the problem. That's what makes. If you know the classical Arnold cat, then you know the quantum Arnold cat very efficiently. So why would you want to? The question is, you have quantum Arnold.
You were criticized by different.
In what?
Well, there is, I think, a correct general question that you can run the maps efficiently. There is no question.
No question.
But the question is, can you extract information in the efficient way? So, and you say, this is example in, I think, very important statement you are doing, right? I can extract information efficiently from, I got in some way my Wigner function.
Yes.
So, and you say, then I can extract information efficiently. And I want to check on some example, is it the old scheme works correctly? I know that I can run my quantum Arnold cat map efficiently, because, okay, so the discussions. Clear, you can do. Then you say, I can measure this point. But do I really gain exponentially? Maybe I will be able to do this also classical, because it's only one trajectory, you see.
Yeah.
So that's my question. Do I really gain exponentially?
I don't think you will gain in. Okay.
On this example.
The answer at today at 3:15 it's that I think you will not gain exponential you will not have any exponential gain for the quantum cat map because it's too simple. I would say that.
Well, I don't know.
Because it's
he said he does efficient. So no, but the point is that it's only one point in the phase space. So I can say, I take this point, I was supposed to, and I run it back in time, and then I say, I don't know, 100 iterations, and I say, this point, will it arrive to my initial partition? I know, black and white points, and I say, where is this point? So this doesn't take exponentially many iterations.
Right.
So
that question, you say, it can be answered by classical means, without an exponential overhead.
But calculating the
Fine.
No,
one point. He says one point. At one point.
One point for a complicated density matrix.
No, but he says, okay, well, that depends on what the initial density matrix is. But if you prepare the state in a kind of a, if you have prior information about what the state is, like you start from a computational eigenstate.
Yeah, simple.
Yeah, just state from a one computational eigenstate.
Then it's easy to calculate.
Then you just run the classical.
No, it's not easy to calculate the classical.
Why not? It's a linear map.
It's not a complete classical easy because you should run exponentially many orders. No, you cannot. But what you can do, you can take the point where you are measuring, and you round this point back in time. And you say, this point,
that's
right. Long it or not? So when you run back in time, you run only one trajectory. Well, when you are running the
forward,
you are running exponentially many. That's not possible to do.
Fine.
But back in time, it's possible to run only one. That's my question. Will again exponentially or not?
So what is your answer? No.
Well, for my age, surely no.
Okay.
But maybe you can choose some very complicated initial distribution for
this. Maybe.
Yeah.
So I didn't think of that. So quite frankly, I was not showing. Yes. The example. Clearly, these were kind of two sort of disconnected pieces of my talk. I apologize for the disconnectedness, but. I was giving the Arnold cut as an example of a classical, something generating classical evolution, and the measurement of the Wigner function was something different. But I think that we should think more.
Just one comment that, you know, I understand your point, but let's ask this question in a more general context. Would we gain some relevant information by measuring very few points of the Wigner function?
Oh, I think this is important.
Yeah.
You might say, in any case, this is some new information which is important, that point.
So, for instance, you can, in some situations, you can measure entanglement of a state just by measuring, say, 4 points of the Wigner function, and that's a measure of entanglement. Or you can show in some situations that the behavior of the Wigner function around the origin of a space gives you the measurement of entanglement of the state. You don't need the whole information for that.
Perhaps we should, since
there was a question by Felix.
Just only one short comment. It seems there is confusion.
Yeah.
You should compare classical cat map only discretely, not in the continuous, but on the discrete. And then there is no difference. One more question.
Yeah, this
if
is
you compare in continuous with classical, with quantum, of course, you
can. No, I'm speaking, of course, about discrete cats.
No, this is discretized classical cat map. And I think that they are the same, so you don't gain. But anyway, we should discuss.
Yes, informal.